Sure.
Well,
Did you just go Foghorn Leghorn? I say. <It's> like, do we?
Hi, I'm Josh, and if you're sitting there right now, you're probably going, "Talk to me."
Clever. Hi. Matt, obviously, and you know, if you ever need a cool dude to take a lunch break with, now you know one dude.
Huh, fair enough.
And it's Charlie.
So this is Charlie in Austin. So one of the things we did this week was the Etheria Film Festival, which is a collection of shorts directed by women. And just in honor of that, I almost only watched 70% of it.
Yikes. Or you just watch it at like 1.7% speed.
Canceled during our intro. Yeah. Wow.
Let me all remind you, no edits, no retakes, no ticket, no shirt, no shoes, no service.
Raw dog.
No smoking bonanza. This is our show. So for our short this week, we had one called The Portrait of God, or La Pintura de Dios. This is a really groovy format for a short, which is it's someone practicing a PowerPoint presentation. So we get like this someone in a quiet place basically doing their homework, right? Timing the speech that they're going to make about this painting. And they show us the blank slide that's the portrait of God. And it's like, some people see a figure here, and they describe it in consistent ways. And then it gets a little spookier, and then it gets a little weirder, and then it gets pretty satisfying by the end of it, I think.
Yeah, this one willied me right the fuck out.
Time, too, yeah.
Yeah, this one willied me out. I was like, because I don't like that.
This gave me goosebumps the first time I watched it. Yeah.
And when you're looking into like an area where like, okay, is there something there? Is there not something there?
And you,
I'm like, are they going to do a jump thing? Like, no, they don't do a jump thing.
Well, and they take advantage of, I think, pareidolia really well, where when they go, okay, stare at this, you know, thing. If it just looks black to you, it does to me too. Most people see that. And then because they're staying on it, you're like, something's going to be there. So you start thinking, yeah, maybe is it starting to? And then when you finally get those two in really faint pinpricks of light for the eyes, you realize like anything you thought you saw before that was just your brain desperately wanting to see something. Yep. And that
exactly
entirely works. It's so, so good. And it's so quiet and just chilling. This is one that, really, I wish we'd been able to do this at the horror festival, because I bet in a huge dark auditorium with a big screen, that would be fucking intense.
Yeah.
That would be such a cool way to see this, but it's still very effective just, you know, on your laptop or whatever. But this one was so different than so much of what we find, because there's no big boogly thing. It's just kind of a steady creepiness that just sort of builds, which, yeah.
Plays with your expectations too, because you go, okay, well, obviously what she's going to see is going to be creepy. And then like when the mouth starts to crank open, like, okay, well, then it eats her. Okay, whatever. And it's not that. It's weirder than that. And I really support that. Like, that is great.
Yep.
Well, I think the best thing about that too was that it, like, once we go, she goes and she runs and then goes to the room, and then it's sort of like, and then it's like all the other stuff that's happened there, and then the light, they open the mouth and the light and the whatever else, and then it cuts back to her in the room, and she's like, she's clutched the crucifix to the point at which like her hands are all bloody, and it's like her eyes are all like red around the edges and stuff, and all this kinds of stuff, and it's sort of like, and it's like this, what they have done to you as a viewer looking into that dark painting is kind of like what's happened to her too. It's just like, it just re-ups the, ugh. And it's just sort of like, I don't know. I think this took a lot of chutzpah to kind of leave a lot of space there. And I thought it was really effective. This one gave me the willies.
Those
and,
long yeah, takes.
Unique too, which is great.
Yeah. And just that little tiny smile at the end, because they give us such a long shot of her that we go, is she dead? Is she dying? Is she terrified? Is her mind gone? And like, oh no, she's in religious ecstasy. That's even creepier.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
It's it leaves room for you to kind of add your own sauce to it, sort of, for interpretation, which is cool.
We just cannot stop talking about semen tonight.
It's a lot of that.
Yo ho.
Yeah, fortunately, most of it, I think, has been not part of the main recording. We'll see what shows up after the credits. Right. But, so anyway, I like this one. I think people should see it, clearly, because I asked people to see it. So
yeah, I thought this was really cool. Good fight on this. I thought it was really cool. I'm really tickled when something is subverts expectations, but not so much in a we're clever than everybody way, but just more like a we're really committed to what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so, like, I mean, and some of the best ones are that way. Curve, I would say, was very much that of that concept. You know, like, I think that's one of those ones that kind of does that job. And it's like, and so you know, from time to time, you pop into one of these ones that just they've really visioned out what they want to do, and great job not falling into jump stuff, not doing all this kind of thing. That thing, that phrase you mentioned, Matt,
we're special all sauce.
Yes. Would you use a smart people phrase? What the hell?
Oh, I think Josh did. The religious ecstasy.
No. Mm-hmm. The thing where you look at something and your brain does something.
Oh, pareidolia.
That's the one. Yeah.
Where your brain tries to create an image of, usually a humanoid image, out of nonsense.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. And so it's like, and the leading to that, and being confident enough to say, like, we're just going to let the viewer kind of sit in this, not flash around, not do a bunch of cuts and stuff. And so, yeah, just
scare you like utter punks, which they could have, because I was completely absolutely at that point.
Yep.
That was the thing. I kept thinking like that. I'm like, oh, these fuckers are going to fall into the thing where it just goes, and you go, ugh. And they're like, nope, we're not going to do that. That's like, thank you. Well done. So yeah, good job, Matt. Well, good fight on that. That's really cool.
I claim my gold star for the day.
Tonight you sleep inside.
Just hand you a candy bar. You've earned it.
I get to get up on the couch.
I feel like I've dropped most of the like vaguely ominous things that parents said to me, you know, like you're cruising for bruising, or I'm going to jerk a knot in you and all that shit. Right.
Whoa. I haven't heard that one.
Boy, I don't know, jerk or not, and you, yeah.
That's weird.
Mm. But, yeah, one of our teachers in high school used to say, I'm going to scrub your knob.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure she meant, like, giving somebody a noogie, but nobody had told her how slang changes.
And yes.
Hand job. But but I do keep the, ooh, you can sleep inside tonight. And, oh, thank you. You get to eat today.
And you know, the one that I think of is, you know, my grandmother was a very, very, very Irish Catholic, from Louisville, Kentucky, of all places. But she was a very Irish Catholic person. There was multiple pictures of the Pope in her house. But then I remember, I can vividly remember this in her beige Chrysler driving, in Prescott, and there was like clouds kind of parting, sun kind of coming through, but it's still raining. There's still a bit of thunder, but there's sunshine. And she said, oh, and it's sunshine. Oh. You hear the thunder. It's when God beats his wife.
God, like, beating his wife. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
it's a very Southern thing too.
Yeah.
And I've always heard the devil beating his wife. That seems less blasphemous.
Yeah. It's just like,
I've heard devil too, but yeah.
But to this day, it's like, it's just like, it still sticks in my head. It's just like, what the fuck?
It's the devil beating his wife.
Yeah. It's just like, God. Good Lord. Anyway,
that's a really good segue to our feminist film festival.
There you go.
There you go.
Let's see, Josh's deletion his brain. His brain muscle.
Domestic abuse is just one of the horrible things that is treated in these short films. This is a little compilation. There's like 7 or 8 of them. I didn't have any of them that pissed me off, really. I had a couple that kind of left me with a huh. And a couple that I really liked for this one. So just overall, I don't know. How deep do you want to get into these? Do you want to just say a couple sentences about each of them?
Yeah, we can just touch on each. And if there's like one that we really want to dig into, we certainly can. But yeah.
So the first one was No Overnight Parking. And that one we saw at one of the film festivals, probably Chattanooga.
And I think so, yeah.
Is it Alyssa Milano running from and ultimately beating the shit out of a serial killer? while her dipshit husband, played by Stuart French, Stuart, whatever the fuck is his first name and last name.
Yeah, whatever order that is.
Yeah. And is he, you know, like the ways are not subtle on that one for sure. It's like, and she even says like, ah, man, at the end
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, it's definitely it's like, fun. It's going for Clapter. Mm-hmm. But it is well done. Like it's, I like it, you know, it's a little eye rolly, but that's, I think simply because of my position in life and all the privileges it affords. Whereas for other people, this is probably really exhilarating. So that's, it's well done though. You can't argue that.
Good mask too.
Yeah, it's a neat idea. I like the blood running out of the one eye when our killer sits up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool little thing.
Hey, man, serial killers in movies need to get beat up more.
Yeah, what was... Is Scream still really the only one that gets abused?
One of the reasons I really like Scream, yeah, is that they just constantly are getting the shit kicked out of them because they're just people.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, but I mean, there was also 1,000 slashers in the late in the 70s and the 80s where, like, it's just one more hulking kind of thing that's impenetrable to all the things.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Friday the 13th, I mean, it kind of, it's just like it keeps being supernatural. So it's like, you know, light him on fire, shoot him into space, cut him into 1,000 pieces, blah, 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 blah. Like, okay, fine. Or, like, even normal dude ones. Like, it's like, oh, I was wrong as a child and I'm, like, disfigured, and so I'm going to beat up everybody at the roller rink or whatever else. And yeah. It's like, that guy, like, just shot him nine times, and he's just like, burger, burger, burger.
It's 1984, and I still have my 70s perm.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be mad too, buddy.
Ooh, that Bob Ross slasher, man. That was great.
Yeah. I just listened to a 20,000 Hertz episode about Bob Ross. It was really good. Also, if you don't listen to 20,000 Hertz, check it out. It's a podcast about sound.
It's my favorite frequency. Next one.
I can't hear it.
I missed the title of the next short, so I just called
Autopilot,
it Lady in Space.
Autopilot.
Autopilot, yeah. Yes. This is a neat little sci-fi thing that I thought the little switcheroo in it, where we're watching the woman kind of alone on a spaceship being menaced, it seems like, and then we find out
she's being menaced by the AI.
Yeah, like, then she is the AI, and the person that's there with her is a human.
What I really love about... Yeah, the detail about this that made me go from being a little womp womp to going, oh, cool, was, you know, you're watching the little kind of, it seems like a hologram companion she's sort of checking in with a couple times a day that starts popping up in random places. But she, like, sees it standing above her bed and it, like, wakes her up and she sits up. But she's laying in bed like a Dracula.
Yeah.
Or a mummy with, like, on her back, arms folded, wearing her, wife beater and a bra, and I'm like, no woman sleeps in a bra and no one sleeps like that. This is bullshit. This is like I thought this was all female directors who would know better that no woman sleeps in a bra. And then she decides to get up and investigate, and she gets up and she's still got her coveralls on, just tied around her waist, and then she slips her bare feet into her boots. And I'm like, this is absolutely not how humans sleep.
This is bananas. Yeah.
And then 3 minutes later, I'm like, brilliant. That is so brilliant. You gave us the clue that everything about this is off, and just totally irked me. And then showed me that I was, one, clever for realizing that was utter bullshit, and two, that they'd thought of it. And I was like, oh, good job. Good job, little short. So well, yeah, I liked this one quite a bit.
Well, they were very aspirational, given, you know, you would imagine they probably don't have, you know, infinite amount of money. And so, like, they're very aspirational what they're trying to pull off. I thought they did a really good job.
Even just looking at the little hallway they meet in, I was going, they had to build all this. This is impressive. Like,
yeah,
good
neat.
On them.
I mean, it's neat to see them, to see, like, that kind of, like, you know, really, like, that kind of aspirational kind of thing. I think it's really cool. But then also, too, like, I thought, I may be putting words in their mouth, maybe, but it's, I kind of, did they not imply that the lady in this, the pilot sort of AI thing, did they not imply that she's like a composite of like a person or a couple people from like Earth? And I was like, well, we want the part of your brain that's like good at doing this job, but we don't want to have the other parts, which is like they would not be able to follow rules or like do what to, you know, like not providing input.
And I don't know if they imply that it's based off of an actual person. I mean, I think what they say is, in order for the program to run for the longest time at the best efficiency without like degrading, that, because it's not, I guess it's not entirely an, like, it's an automaton, right, with like an AI brain, and like having it work the best required having it just think it was also just a crew member performing its duties, because apparently that made it, you know, that's your sci-fi leap of logic. But whether or not that means it was based on someone or it was simply told, this is who you are, and that could have been just wholly made from scratch, I don't know that I understood that to be one way or the other.
Yes, I just, yeah, maybe
did
I was
hinge on that for you. Like, did that?
Yeah, well, I thought it was like a little bit of that, like the suggestion being like, because the guy has that monologue where he's trying to explain to the thing that the thing is a toaster, and it's like, I'm not a toaster, and it's like, no, you don't understand. Like, you're created for this reason, and I was like, I kept getting the impression that it was like we tried this with actual women, but they have opinions and stuff. It's like, it doesn't really work, so.
Yeah.
Just had to kind of strip away all that other kind of thing, like without like fully on saying that. But I think I kind of thought that in his monologue it was kind of suggested. But I mean, I don't really.
I thought they had, and I could be wrong, but my impression was they'd started at robot and drew it as far human as they had to, not started at human and drew it as far robot as they had to.
That makes sense.
But the question there, those two different interpretations make it a totally different thing. So one is far more sinister, I think, but I guess I hadn't read that into it. More just like it was an AI that was suddenly becoming self-aware as opposed to running a program. And that was, that still runs into some ethical issues, but.
And I did enjoy that, like, the guy is not bad. Like, his motives do seem to be genuine, that like,
he just wants his autopilot to work. Yeah.
This is going to endanger the mission. We got to fix you. There is no, also you're shaped like a lady.
Yeah.
That was an interesting
thing.
Which
is also
too,
a pointless thing to do. Yeah. It could just be a blob of a robot why does it have to be a robot at all? Can't it just be the ship?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's meant to lift a wrench or something.
If you have something to look at though, too, like.
Sure. But I mean, as far as like, film, you know, that's real world logic intruding on sci-fi.
Hey.
So the next one was called Sucker, and Sucker was about a older sister who goes to visit younger sister, who's kind of the fuck up sister, to find that she has a giant worm growing, stuck on her head and around her neck, kind of like that dude in Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Bib Fortuna.
Yes, otherwise tuna get all over your shirt.
And embarrassed at meeting.
Yes.
I hate you for that. I hate you for that so much. I did not see that coming. God damn it.
Ever since I heard the phrase, how you mine for fish, that is how I think of Bib Fortuna.
I always think of Always For Do.
Yes, Always For Do is good as well. But I love the idea of this. And it's like, this is like a neat little, you know, treatise on addiction, you know, or what it's like to be with someone who is destroying themselves and you don't really, you're not sure if you can help. And it was also like nice and gross. The only thing is I just wish they'd had a little more money for the creature. Because once it opens its mouth, that should be terrifying, but it's just a little too nom nom puppet.
It is, but I mean, I can forgive it.
Yeah, that's not to say it wrecks the thing, but it, like, I could see how this would really get under my skin with just a little
more money.
Yeah, a little more money.
Yeah,
it's just good.
Yeah,
I'm kind of in the same boat. I think there's something about this sort of like kind of weird, like gigantic kind of booger scarf that she's, it's kind of like, it doesn't, it is creepy, but it's sort of like, I think if maybe another draft at the design of the thing, or, you know, like making it a little smaller, a little larger, something, you know, something that would modify it around. I also kept thinking of the idea of like, if it seemed to have some level of control over her, but I would have liked even more of just sort of like, of just like fighting against, like, you know, during the thing of being like, oh, if I distract it with some noise, then I'll move this way, and it just goes, no, the fuck you won't. And then, like, a lot of unnatural kind of movements and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. It's just sort of, you know, in execution, it's kind of, you know, kind of middle of the road. But overall, I don't think it was bad. And in terms of a metaphor, it certainly worked for sure.
Yeah, as addiction metaphors go, it's a fine one. It is a little weird to me that you end it with the addiction just kind of hopping from sister to sister.
Mm-hmm.
Because that isn't exactly how addiction works.
That's where the metaphor breaks down. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's like up until then I'm like, okay, yeah, this is, you know, we've seen a lot of horror as addiction metaphor. That's a pretty common thing to see. But like, I thought this was done really well. That's the part that just kind of confused me. It's like, so I don't know that everyone that is in the unfortunate position of taking care of someone dealing with an addiction is somehow susceptible then to that same addiction as though they're more vulnerable than someone who is not around. Like that does happen, but I also feel like you, unless you've already been part of that, but like,
and then, you know, maybe that's a personal experience, but like, I wasn't sure if they were trying to make that point or just that was where the story had to go.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that's where it felt like it went to more of like, this is a horror beat. Whereas previous we've been watching all addiction beats.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I kept thinking too, like if it, instead of infecting the sister, if it had like in the ensuing battle or whatever else, it had like torn a hand or a wrist or arm off of her. So then we just fast forward to her like living her life, but she's missing an arm. Mm. And the idea being that like
metaphor for loss instead.
When you lose somebody to addiction, like there's like you tried the best you could possibly do, but you're gonna always carry some part of that, you know, around or whatever else. And yeah, but I mean, but still, I mean, you know, certainly cool. I would have liked another go at the creature. You know, because like I said, it just sort of was like I kept calling it a booger scarf in my notes.
Yeah, and I feel like that's probably a money issue. So like I can forgive the idea that that's the
yeah for sure
it's beyond what they could afford to do. So
the next one is the Earl King.
Yeah, it is.
Which like lady living in like an Amish seems like kind of environment
paradise. Say it.
Sure.
You have to if you say Amish at this point. Living in an Amish, what? You're going to say community instead of paradise?
That's true. I have turned butter once or twice.
Yeah, see?
I did have the joy of meeting Weird Al when he did Wits here like 10 years ago and was able to tell him that he almost killed me. And he was like, oh, really? So, yeah, because when Amish Paradise came out, I was a huge fan of Pulp Fiction. And I was driving in my car listening to the CD on the way home from the store. And when you got to My Brother, I Might Have to Get Medieval on Your Hiney, I started laughing so hard I had to pull over. I nearly died because of how funny you are, Mr. Yankovic. And he was very sweet about it. So
he seems like the kind of guy that
I was going to say, I think universally I've really heard that it's sort of his deal.
Mm-hmm. Which, man, dear listeners, if you've not yet watched the documentary film-ish biopic
right.
of him, God, you got to see that. It's so good.
So this thing is about a woman who runs away from an oppressive community in
Amish paradise,
falls in love with the a creature from the forest who is just like a dude made out of wood.
He's like a dryad, maybe.
Yeah, kind of like a Power Rangers-y, fairly elaborate costume on this dude. I was impressed.
It looks pretty cool.
But it turns out he's as much of a dick as any of them. And just kind of wants to imprison her and eventually, like, suck all the life out of her and have her just become part of his wood. Which is, dudes, am I right?
So I struggled with this one a little bit.
I
wish it
had a resolution, but I liked it.
I mean, the apparatus itself was really quite neat. I mean, it's very well designed and just like really top notch work, like really, really cool. It's, you know, the design of that thing is really cool. The thing that I struggled with was like, I mean, I feel like I'm not going to be so jerky as to say like a thinly veiled thing about like grooming or like, you know, that kind of thing, like preying on like a child, but it's like that part of it was a little weird. Because it was like, because it's occurring without there actually ever being like a commentary or something about that component of it. She just happens to be like someone who very clearly it seems like she's not of age, really. And so sort of like that was kind of weird. And then the other part of it too was sort of like the way that it kind of goes. It's just sort of, I don't know. I kind of left this one feeling like kind of like.
Yeah, this I liked the look of our woodland dude, but I felt like there's like sort of the running away to the promised, you know, safety and succor of this, you know, dangerously attractive other, and then finding out that there's no safety in that type of thing. And it's like, okay, I kind of get that that's what we're getting, but I don't know that there was enough there for me. Mm-hmm. This one sort of, it wasn't using a light touch. It's just, it just kind of brushed past me and it was sort of, I didn't have much to feel about this.
I liked watching it as it was unfolding. And then at the end, it was kind of a,
Yeah.
And I just wondered if I'm missing something, you know, that I'm not smart enough to pick up on. Like, am I failing to read between the lines?
Yeah, there may just be a thing that, you know, swooshed over my head too. I don't know.
This next one, Incomplete, I thought was interesting because it doesn't have any women in it. And that's, you know, like, it's remarkable to think that is something you notice, like when, I don't know. I thought that was interesting. But this is just a black man in some kind of house arrest situation in a creepy house. There's a machine that he has to blow in periodically, and then it takes a Polaroid of him so that it proves that he's still there. And the machine malfunctions, which leaves him running around and trying not to get dinged and removed from parole. And then, like, there's something sinister in the picture behind him, and then he gets sucked into the machine, I guess.
Or something.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
This
is another one that, like, it made me feel dumb. I missed something.
Like, I did like the, I guess what I got out of it, having been in that situation, I didn't have the blowy machine, but I've had the little ankle bracelet, which, by the way, you can't take a shower when you have one of those on. That part, I was like, what? Come on. And I've had friends that had the little blowy machine. But the idea of how, despite the fact that you're in this house or that you're, you know, in this, you know, perhaps even comfortable looking situation, you are still very much imprisoned. And the idea that there's always these hoops that you're constantly being forced to jump through, with all the extra like weights tied to your ankles that the same system that's got the requirements has put on you, and the difficulty in trying to get ahead and get out and get away from that, even with the best of intentions, because the tiniest little hiccup in anything can be the setback that sends you to do time or back to court or lose custody or, you know, any number of things, and some of which are legitimately beyond your control. And there's not a lot of wiggle room or sympathy in that system. And so watching this guy who, as far as I can tell from what evidence we're given in the short, is not trying to fuck around. He's made the terrible decision of having his system installed across the house from his bedroom and not having his bedroom. And at least I had to have a landline installed when I had all my shit, cause that's how those things work. So maybe that's different now, but, all that shit should be like right near you at all times. So like, okay, that's foolish on his part, but that's no crime. And so like watching this guy just do his best and how frustrating that is. Like, I thought this did a great job of illustrating a larger frustration with a certain system. And then you have a Boogan that is kind of there and I guess is maybe supposed to be a metaphor for like the system gets you in the end, despite your best efforts. Cause the guy talks about how, yeah, this one acts up, you know, like the last guy and the last guy. And, you know, so it's like, even despite your best efforts, you really can't get out cause it's not fair. And as a metaphor for that, it kind of works, but as then a straight up horror thing, I feel like at the end being a little confusing, you lose some of that straight up horror that maybe the idea of having a Boogan in it gives you. Whereas if it was simply the frustration of the system not working, that's almost just enough, or at least it would have been for me. That's a very analysis.
Yeah, I was kind of more in that boat. And then also, like, you know, I think, you know, this definitely seemed like it was a very interesting idea, and there's a very interesting execution, but I kind of feel like it got a little bit scattershot. It was cool to see David Constable in there. He's the guy who played Gale in Breaking Bad, and I was like, oh, cool. That was great to see him pop up in there. I think it's a really cool idea. Just, I think it could have maybe used a little bit more honing in how to get it across. Because, yeah, as you say, Matt, like, the thing of, like, having this system that's sort of, like, predetermined to fail, like, I think that's sort of the suggestion that, like, eventually this monster is going to get you, and then it's sort of like this documentation sort of thing, and it's like it's not going to work. Or, oh, this model doesn't work, or whatever else. Like, well, then get another fucking model. Like, it's sort of like, it's ridiculous.
But they don't.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just sort of like...
Is it's like expecting the system to work for you.
And the little Black Lives Matter thing
sticker
on it. Ugh. Just so you know, we totally care.
Yeah, I always wanted one of those. That was
neat, yeah.
Yeah.
Border is a short little lovely meta thing where we have a lady watching a romance show on TV that turns into a murder, like dude unexpectedly just turns to his partner and murders her. Then looks straight out the screen.
She's totally hammered.
That lady, right? Maxwell and his silver hammer.
Hey.
And then
what's in the other lady, case? Aspirin.
Lady gets nervous. Lady is freaked out. Lady is then murdered by character from the TV, who then turns to us and says, "You saw too." Like, yes, that is great.
Yeah. The turning back to the camera. I'm like, hey, you quit looking at me.
You stay in your lane.
Yeah. You stay in this short Japanese man.
I appreciated that this was exactly as long as it needed to be and no longer.
I don't think they got out.
There's no time to get bored. I think that works.
Mm-hmm. So then sleep study. Mom has sleep paralysis demon and accidentally bludgeons her husband and baby to death. Weirdly weird.
Oh, well, so I thought you were going to say weirdly identifiable, and I was like, you know, I haven't seen Jess in a little bit.
Okay. So one of the things I really love about this one is this is actually one of the ones from Bite Size Halloween, and so the writer director lady is the person I know. That's Natalie Metzger, and she and her husband had a baby this last year, and I love this because I think it's a sour little ball of a thing. You're like, oh, it couldn't possibly, oh my god. But what I really love about it is that, like, there is no, like, in this little parable, there is no hope. There is no you just go footy, and then wake up from a dream and go like, oh, I better make sure that I'm putting away the iron and getting my folic acid, because I might just beat the shit out of my family with an iron, like, as a, like, a cautionary tale. It's like, no. That's it. But it's just, it's like, yep, there you go, boom. And it's like, oh, that's vicious and delightful. So I'm like, good on you, Natalie. That's cool.
Yeah, fun. Angels was haunting the woman who's caring for her mother who's dying of cancer. She finds the body of an alien in the woods after some, like, color of magic style lights in the sky. Mm-hmm. And just touching the body heals a cut on her hand. So next we see her just hauling his dead ass in to heal mother. And then we discover, oh, he's not dead and you all are monsters. But would I do the same thing? I probably would. And, oh, shit. So, yeah, this was short, but kind of beautiful.
Yeah, it was an interesting little deal, and then very artfully shot without being up its own ass, which was really, really good. Because I think it could have very much got into that kind of gauzy, sort of long, sort of, you know, never-ending, you know, was that like the way you described the soft melon in the center or whatever, like that, where it's just sort of like, and the camera just sort of gets bored and looks at a branch for a little while, kind of deal. And it didn't do that, but it was very artfully made. So yeah, that was really cool. I definitely would have loved to have got even more from that one for sure.
Yeah. It's solid. It's another one of those ones that's just a little light and breezy for me, but, can't argue with the talent of it. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, it kept me thinking. Go to Bed, Raymond was cute. This one was the closest to like the, I feel like we've seen a fair few of these, you know, like pretty decently produced, simple concept, like good, solid, you know, line drive on it. And I felt like this was good. You know, it's like, it was fine, solid.
Yeah. Well, and I was expecting, oh, sorry, Matt.
Go ahead, because I want to see what you say next and see if it's what I was about to say.
Oh, I'm mad. I'm a dork. Was it?
Wow. Nailed it.
Ah, perfect.
Got it in one. We've been doing this together too long.
I was going to say, finish each other's sandwiches. Now, so I was, you know, with the setup with the little boy in the bed, and the dad comes in, and the little boy, nope, the creep thing, and I go, oh, no. I was like, okay, well, this is going to be a creature above the bed, creature under the bed. Like, that's what the setup's going to be.
That's
like,
the obvious
okay,
one.
Yeah. Fine. Like, that's what it's going to be. And then it was like, by the third go round, I was like, okay, well, that's not what we're doing. Like, okay, cool, that's good, I'm glad that we're not going that route. And then it was like that thing of like where most parents have had that experience where their child will just say something just butt clenchingly creepy.
Yeah,
and you're like, what the F? And the child is like, derp, 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 and it goes back to doing what they're doing. You're like, don't. It's like if you have a pet and the pet starts looking in a corner and you're like, don't, what are you looking at? Mm-hmm. What the hell is going on here? And the pet's just like, I would love to tell you, I don't speak English though, so I can't warn you about the monster in the corner. And it's like that same kind of thing. Like, kids will say creepy stuff. And so this one kind of plays on that. So once you realize it's not going to be the under the bed, over the bed thing, it's like, then it kind of leans into that real heavy. And it's just like, oh, that's a thing. I don't want to be mean to them to say like the apparatus on the child was that kind of a little rough. But I do think that, like, if that's the limitation, then, like, maybe try to, like, shoot a different way or do something. Because it's a creepy thing. I mean, the concept.
The idea is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's a. It's
but, like, again, so, I think just budget gets in the way of.
Yeah. And it's, like, so.
Effectively.
Cool idea. Yeah, definitely a thing I wanted more of. Or this felt like it could have been part of, like. Almost like a trick or treat, you know, trick or treat. Mm-hmm. The stories like overlap each other.
Yeah.
This could have been an overlapped into another story thing where this is just occurring, where there's these just sort of like the unpicked children are like kind of like forcing their way back into day to day life or whatever.
So what was your take? Y'all's take on the unpicked children? What was that?
Right.
Because yeah, at first Jess when he says, like,
"Ooh, is this an?" Abortion?
That's what I was gonna say, Charlie, when we both talked. I was like, yeah. I thought this was going, they're the kids you didn't pick. And I was like, oh shit, are we gonna get into abortion guilt?
Mm-hmm.
Which is real. I've got relatives that never got over that they never were able to have kids when they were married, and truly think God is punishing them because this aunt had an abortion when she was younger. And they have lived into their 60s now, hating themselves, each other, and God since their 20s, you know. And it's like, I was like, oh fuck, that's a heavy topic to tackle, that's cool, but
that's interesting.
I don't think that's where they went, right?
No.
they seem to not do that.
It seemed like they would have had to have had a flashback to another time when they were younger,
or at least say something very straightforward out loud.
Yeah, like address that in a way that would nail it up on the top. But you know, if this was a longer thing, or if there was if it had been built out more, then maybe you get more of that or more clarity there.
Yeah, I had just that was initially the thought, but then I thought it was more of just a metaphysical thing, like we're all up in, you know,
like there's a soul reservoir that
waiting for you, and you. Shows, you know, with your wishes, your magical thinking, whatever.
Yeah, your wish nut.
It makes you think. It feels like almost like a, you know how like, you know, Douglas Adams and Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman, like they always get such great glee out of like the ridiculousness of bureaucracies, and it's sort of like I almost think of this almost would fit in with Good Omens, like this thing of like it's like, well, his souls are sort of sitting around waiting to be picked. Like, is there a reason how one of you gets picked or the other one? Like, absolutely not, no rhyme or reason whatsoever. But you have to fill out this form and you have to bring it to this place and then check in and then you wait. And it's like, well, can we have a better system? Like,
but then you get an incomplete from the machine. And you left your phone upstairs.
So it's, you know, so definitely a lot of different ideas going, and so yeah, good go at it.
Good effort. The last one was Make the Call. You have like rage zombie infection thing happening where people have to, if you want to go hang out with somebody, you both have to take a test to prove that you're not going to rage out on them. We have, I think, a pretty solid metaphor there where like, has your husband turned? Is he, you know, is he raging out on you? And it's like, right. No, he's fine, but she's covering for him. And yeah, it doesn't spell it out like some of these, but I think this one at least hit enough of it that I could draw the right parallels and everything. And it ends up a little bit light on story, but it does do a good job with that metaphor.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, a very, very cool idea, and I think an overall good execution. A little too talky. I think it could have been shortened up a little bit that way. It was really cool to see Camille Chen in there. I first had seen her, as it forever ago, in was it Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. She's great. She's always great. And so I was like, I want to see her. I would love to see her even more stuff because I think she's really solid. I just think this one kind of talk too much a little bit. It just kind of because I mean it was shot well, and you've got people that are capable actors, and there's some mystery going on with the little girl and then the person behind the window and then the whatever, and then as it kind of goes to the third act of it, you're like, whoa, Jesus, like this is oh my gosh. And so I think it had enough going for it for style, atmosphere, and skill. I just don't think it needed to be a lot of the extra talking. So, but otherwise, I mean, it's a kind of a cool deal for sure.
Yeah, I thought this was really solid. This is does the job of, you know, you grok the metaphor, I think, pretty quick, and it is a little overlong and talky. But I also think you can't do anything after you've showed your rage zombie, so you have to get any exposition you want out before, which in this case requires not just the metaphor but also the world building to allow for the metaphor. So I guess there has to be a certain amount of that, but
yeah
I thought it was done well and a good version of that. So yeah, solid. You know,
nice. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our two other movies. So for this collection as a whole, as Matt pointed out over the break, we forgot to rate it. It's hard to rate it as a feature because it doesn't have any connective tissue holding it together as an anthology. I don't think it's trying to, really.
I mean, I guess we've done anthologies that don't have really a connector, yeah. But still.
Overall, like, this is 8 solid shorts and a couple, like I said, a couple that are great, a couple that are... Yeah. So I would say like a 7.5 out of 10, like definitely one of the sharper collections of shorts we've seen.
Yeah, I think I'll go a 7 out of 10 as well, which is kind of where most good anthologies seem to end up, because it's pretty rare you get like a Trick or Treat where pretty much everything works.
Yeah, Trick or Treat and Southbound are kind of like those like gold standards.
Yeah. Whoa. So, you know, that's not like... It does. That maybe sounds lower than it is, but for an anthology, that's actually pretty damn good. And yeah, this was, does what an anthology should, which is just give you a bunch of different things. So even if one thing's not really floating your boat, you've got something else coming up in just a few minutes. And it was engaging to kind of see what new style or take would be coming up next. So like, this is a fun way to spend an evening. I'm also, as I think we all are, just a sucker for short films as a medium. So, that's cool. This is the kind of thing that would have saved me an entire night's worth of work trying to find stuff to watch for the show, because I could have easily pulled some of these. But I think it's worth watching. And yeah, I'll go 7 out of 10 quasi anthologies.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I mean, I would say 7. There's a few that really stood out, and definitely I would say the majority of them were ones where I basically was like, okay, I want to see the next thing this person does, because I'm really engaged and I want to see they have some good creative energy, which, I mean, if you think about what the point of this is that having women directors, like, that's really cool, because it's just sort of like, not because like, oh, up until this point, I just sort of figured the majority of women couldn't direct right out of a wet paper bag. Like, it's not that, but it's more just sort of like a, by the way, if you kind of like watch one after the other one, you're engaged, you want to see what the next one is, you see different ideas, different whatever else. And it's like, oh, the overarching theme is they're all directed by women. Like, huh, it's almost as if, like,
yeah,
it's, you know, there's something to be said for like having good opportunity and good outlet, because there's obviously some great creative energy going on. So it's sort of like, it's like, it doesn't seem like a radical concept really, but it's sort of like, as it stands, it's cool to kind of see that through. Like, I said, a couple of them, you know, worked a little better than other ones for sure. But yeah, I would definitely say 7 out of 10. You know, you can decide for yourself if you want to smile more.
But, no, I was going to say, but definitely talk less, but that was Hamilton, not me being horrible. anyway, Paul Dude's Deadly Lunch Break, or El Almuerzo Mortal de Paul Dude. I guess So, Paul Dude is a 40-something man who's obsessed with being on a talent show and proving to the world that he has amazing skills, which he doesn't. But his mom has kind of convinced him he does, and they have a very sweet relationship. But things go horribly awry for him, and he sets out to take revenge and fails to have the courage to, but like circumstances kind of coalesce around him in door-slamming farce ways to make him the like catalyst, at least, for getting rid of all the people who have been holding him back. And this movie is, like I said before, this movie is drier than Ben Shapiro's wife. It's the humor in this is just like a desert full of Stephen Fry's dry. It is, this is a dry fucking wit of a movie. I had a decent time with it. I think Matt was very not into it, and Charlie was pretty enthused by it. And for me, it was like, yeah, like, this is fun. I wish it were a little nuttier, a little more gonzo, or a little darker. But it, for bumping agreeably along was kind of how I ended up with it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was one of those things, like, for whatever reason, like, this one just really, really clicked. I really clicked in with this one. Like, part of the thing was, like, there's so many people on this that I really like. You know, there's just, like, you know, you watch 1,000 different quiz shows and various things, and like you see Tom Meaton, and you see Johnny Vegas, and you see Alice Lowe, and you see these guys that are all like, I've seen them on the tons of stuff, and Mandeep Dhillon, who plays the lady cop, she plays this, she's a character on the CSI, and she's excellent on there, and I was like, it's just really fun to see all these people that I really liked, just sort of like kind of getting through. And then I think what I said in the text message, which was like, and I don't think Josh is wrong by any stretch of the idea of like if it was gonzoier or nuttier, but what I really, really liked about it was that at about a midway point, after the first two people just accidentally just murderate themselves just ridiculously, it was like, and he is still kind of determined on his sort of quest for revenge, so to speak, and then the thing with the mom, it's like, I think this could have gone a very Todd Schultz-y, very like, it's just the universe, man, French new wave kind of way. And instead, it kind of went like, it still plotted along in a silly way. But then it was like, when people are seeing him like do the performing in the thrift shop with the grenade, the whole thing. And it's like, initially, like, everybody's standing around and they're kind of watching him going like, this guy's not real good. But what the choice that they make is that he's not the spectacle. And like, he's actually like having, once he can kind of break through it, he's actually kind of having fun. Like, is he the most talented? Is he the most talented person ever? Like, no. But he's like charming and like having fun, like doing what he's doing. And it's sort of like, I think they kind of pick up on that vibe where it's sort of like, oh, you know, it's not really about like the perfection, because all the perfection shown on talent shows is all bullshit anyway. So it's sort of like, it's like, here's this guy that just sort of like, give it a good try kind of vibe about it. And I really love that that's the choice that they made versus the sourball Schultz direction, and that I really appreciate it. That it's like, maybe I'm just becoming soft in my old age, but like whenever a thing makes a decision to go like a little softer side of Sears, I'm always a little happier versus it just going completely sour bowl direction.
It was also a trip to see Colin God of Sex from Love Actually in there.
Yeah, and, with Clemson.
And Jim Hawkins from Muppet Treasure Island in there.
Yeah.
It's like, who is that guy? And he looks like Jason Hervey from Wonder Years. But I was like, that dude is way older than that guy is. Like, oh, holy shit. That is so weird that dude is now a grown up. Like, I understand how time works, but still.
Yeah, I had a couple interesting moments watching this. One was like watching the series of unfortunate events that this dude and his mom encounter, and then going, oh, I see. We're watching Mumblecore British Falling Down. And that really reframes the movie. Like, except in this, instead of being Michael Douglas being a shitheel, you take that same character and kind of make him a hero. And then as soon as like the first guy he goes out to murder for revenge is not actually killed by him, I went, ah, I think I see what's happening here. And then sure enough, the second one, he doesn't actually do the killing. I'm like, okay, we're going to give him an out at the end to be well-loved, or at least understood after being misunderstood. Okay. And so then to me, then that just kind of preemptively pulled all the teeth out of this, since it's not exactly, you know, everybody's going to be okay in the end, but because you can assume something, some kind of upense will come for these people, but like, he's going to be all right. Like, there's certainly, like, you know, at that point, like, they're not going to let this guy just be bummed at the end of this movie. And so you end up with is essentially, yeah, like, everybody decides to, for some reason, completely forget all their social conditioning that they've had for their entire lives and celebrate mediocrity. And then fortunately the movie ends, because otherwise the next morning when this guy wakes up, he'd be, you know, the guy that everybody thought was so great, like, you know, like a Susan Boyle, that then they all go, oh my God, it's amazing, she's fantastic. And they go, oh, you're going to pay $45 to see her in concert? And they go, hell no, of course not. Like, no, we're not going to do that.
I didn't think they were celebrating mediocrity. I thought
I think they're
in the story.
Right. And I think they are. But I mean, that's what they're ending up doing, is like, this guy's mediocre. He'd be fun at karaoke night, but no one's going to spend money on that. No one's going to watch that TV show. So it's good for that, like, one moment. But then the next morning, everybody goes back to their real personality and this guy is irrelevant. And like, that's why the movie has to end when it does.
But at least he had his moment, you know?
Yeah.
What I kind of took it, since you can say that, Max, I kind of took it more, like a little bit of like a, and you mentioned Falling Down, which is obviously the kind of pull from, but like in a weird way, Falling Down is an interesting one. Cause like when you're like 21, 22, 23, and you watch Falling Down, you're like, yeah, fuck them, fuck everybody. And then you get older, you're like, everybody still sucks, but like, I mean, life is somewhat precious, and I don't want to die myself. So, like, well, maybe you should just lighten the fuck up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, when you're 16, you're like right on, and then hopefully shortly thereafter, as you mature, you realize he's the villain. And like, oh, sadly, okay, not everybody does. But fortunately, we can identify him by their red hats now. So. Yeah,
it's those ladies at lunch, and fuck them. No,
the, thank you for going there with me.
There you go. The little red hat, so good God. So I kind of almost took it in a way to be like how, you know, like in day to day life, everybody's had that day where like just absolutely nothing's working correctly. Like the one toe will be thrice stubbed before you get through the living room. You're like, why?
Thrice.
Why do I keep hitting my damn toe on shit? And it's like, oh, I forgot my coffee. I have to pick up a coffee. I don't want to spend money on coffee, but I'm fucking tired. And then like miss a light, miss a turn. Have to turn double back. Forgot the receipt. This thing happened. This is expired. I forgot to do this. And then like, by the end of the day, you're just sort of like, God, fuck it. All this bureaucracy shit and rules and nonsense and blah. And it's like, I just think that the average person walking around just kind of like can kind of got into that. I think that's what they kind of leaned into, was more just sort of like, not so much like him as a performer as much as being like, you know, like initially it's like, oh, there's this crazy murderer out there. Like, well, it's not really like that so much. It's sort of more just sort of like somebody kind of being fed up with things and being treated mis- it's what you imagine you want to do. It's like kind of the dream on the kind of scenario.
It is wish fulfillment. Yeah.
You kind of, there's a wish fulfillment component to it. And it's a little toothless in that sense, because it's like, it's not going for the completely splattery crazy, like him causing all these deaths, but they kind of forgive him or whatever else, but it's more just very silly. But it is that wish fulfillment kind of projection thing that I think that's what kind of people by the third act, I think that's what they're kind of dialing into. Yeah. But then like from the humor standpoint, like I don't know, for whatever, I was in the right mood and right whatever, but I there's so many moments of this that I just laugh my ass off. Like the lady from Prevenge, wherever else, when the pastor, when he's giving the sermon, wherever else, and you about 10 seconds in, I'm like, oh, well, obviously he's being blown currently. And yeah, it's sort of like, and else, and she just looks up and goes, that's a mouthful, Father. It's like, oh, God damn it. And it's just like all that stuff. It just little bits like that, I really was tickled by. And so
I mean, I enjoyed some of those, that like that first entire act of the movie is just our dude getting hilariously humiliated in various ways. Like the whole business with the ramp, you're just a little bit angry, but you gotta laugh because that is exactly how fuckers like that guy are.
Exactly.
You have a little tiny bit of power and no imagination.
I've seen a nerd with power.
Yeah, and just using whatever ability you can to make someone's life harder for no fucking reason. Like, yeah, I know that guy, but the way it plays out, it just, you have to call the number, and then he calls the number.
The phone's the right there.
Dude goes and picks up the phone and then walks right up to, are you the one who wanted the ramp? There's only them on the, yeah. That
whole setup was like,
I think that's why I don't watch a lot of, like, the British comedy people recommend to me, because I try and it's stuff like that. And that's not even a hint of a smile watching that. It's just boring. Like, it's just, for whatever reason, my brain isn't wired to think that's funny. So more Wallace and Gromit for everybody else, I guess. But like, it's just, it doesn't work for me. So like, it was really just, this whole movie was like, all the funny parts were just like, you know, a solid line, no heartbeat EKG. And then some feel good at the end that wasn't earned from anything happening before that. So I was just like, this is plain white toast all the way through.
I felt like a spiritual cousin a little bit. I don't know if the John Cleese movie Clockwise, do you know that movie?
I haven't seen that one.
It came out in the '80s, and it's, I really love it. It's like he basically is this very, very tucked sort of fellow, and then it's just a matter of like him trying to get, basically just complete a basic task from getting from one place to another place. And he's very much a punctual, everything has to be tucked into this place, and just having him, just the world being very indifferent to his tuckedness, and just sort of like having it all kind of come unraveled, and it's delightful. But I could see that if that type of stuff doesn't,
it's just not my flavor.
Click,
yeah,
then it's just not gonna click through. But I was so many bits of this that just was just like, even the bit where the guy was like, you know, the confronting the priest about the money for the thing, and it's sort of like, and he's just getting this like snake oil salesman, not Kent Mansley, what's the character, the monorail character from The Simpsons?
Lionel Hutz. Yeah,
he's the lawyer, but the guy who does the monorail, where it's sort of like you're asking legitimate questions.
And it's another Phil Hartman character.
Whiz bang, ba bing bang, bo. And you're like, oh, yeah, right. And then 5 minutes later, like, wait, he didn't answer my question. And it's like, and he's getting that little runaround of this kind of like the, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways kind of things and whatever else. And then the nun lady with the candle, and they're like, you know, like, oh, donate to the church. And then she walked by, she's just fucking cunt. I was like, that's great. So, yeah, I mean, I do think this is definitely one of those things is like, if it just isn't in your wheelhouse, it's just, I could see that this could be difficult. But I really commend them for, instead of being sour and mean, there was this sort of little ray of like, most people are normal people. Most people are everyday people. And it's like, and there's a little bit to relate to somebody being like, all right, stupid bureaucracy of life, like, put out the absolute ridiculousness and unfairness of all this nonsense. And it's like, that's what I really kind of enjoyed.
Yeah, I feel like this is just because of the difference in styles from what I like. This was me like reading the code instead of seeing the movie. That's just not Matrix compelling. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just like if you, you know, watching DOS prompts, like it's not the same as playing Skyrim. DOS prompts! You will give them to me?
Or you will get DOS boot.
I will mince about in mine panties!
So, ultimately, for the dude, I would say 7 out of 10. I was gently entertained.
Oh. That's nice.
So gently.
Oh my. Now it's turning into creepy ASMR. Yeah, I think I pretty succinctly explained that this just didn't do anything for me. I ain't mad at it, aside from just that like I could have been doing something else. So this one is just a heavy better place in Marvel Puzzle Quest on my phone. trying to get through this. So yeah, 3 out of 10 drier than a Popeye's biscuit humor.
Yeah, I just think I remember even saying in text message, you guys like, I can absolutely see that this may not work for some people. Like, yeah. It's just not, you know. But I really had a ball with this, and you know, one of the areas I have a hard time sometimes with uncomfortable embarrassment humor, like The Office or the original Office. Like, oftentimes I would really struggle with it because it's like I like these people, like the thing, but like, boy, I can't. With the cringy kind of thing, I have a hard time with it at times. And what's funny was in this one, Johnny Vegas plays the guy with the Japanese tea room thing or whatever else, and it's like, hats off to him for being like, I am just going to commit to how fucking uncomfortable and shit this person is, and just sit in it. And I was like, ordinarily that would just make me just crawl out of my skin, but I was just like, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff and I find him pretty funny as just like a person. And so I was like, oh, you know what? I love that you're just dialing into the unease of this person in this circumstance. Like, good. Well done. Well done, buddy. Like, that was just enjoyable. So it's just, like I said, I just had a different viewing experience. So I would, I would be a little bit higher than Joshua. I would actually say 7.5. I really had a ball with this thing. And Josh pointed out one other thing too, that even in the third act, when they kind of, like I said, they go the route that I'm glad that they went. Also, there is a genuineness to the relationship with his mom. His mom is not like a chain smoking, abusive harpy. His mom is sweet and
she's just kind, very sweet.
And they have a neat dynamic, which I really loved. I love that was another choice that they made to not be like this, like badgering, awful, belligerent.
It's not the mom shit. From Throw Mama from the Train.
It's not that. And it's like, and I think that that's been done enough. I think that the well-worn kind of man boy guilt, you know, living with mama's boy kind of thing. I just don't think that there's much that can be wrung from that anymore. I don't think it's particularly interesting. And so I just think it's a little cool. It's cool for somebody to kind of like approach that part of the writing and go like, well, let's make a different thing. Hmm. And so I thought that was kind of a neat little deal too. And I was so sad that she needs a fucking glass of water. God damn it. So I'll say 7.5 out of 10, 7.5 out of 10. Bureaucracy.
Easy for you to say.
I cannot say that 5 times fast.
So let's hop to our final movie, which we went to see in person, like theater-going theatergoers, called Talk to Me or Habla Conmigo. First feature from a couple of YouTube short creating folks and getting a lot of buzz, and seems like deservedly so. Like, this felt like a very modern movie, but also like with shades of 90s kind of shot.
It was relatable, which means I guess 90s would be why, because that would have been when I was about that age. So,
yeah, like it's set in the present day and it actually is set in the fucking present day, which is nice.
Hooray.
And we've got a group of kids of various ages who are like clearly Gen Z, but not aggressively so. Like, they don't have to put every single bit of slang in there. And also you have a funny moment where mom gets to use the slang, which I always enjoy. And you got a creepy hand that you hold on to, and then you can see dead people and talk to them, and you got a spiral into madness, and like parts of this are genuinely creepy and parts of it is generally like genuinely sad. And I had a good time with this.
This was a great theater experience. I thought this was one of those ones that benefited from having the big sound and, you know, the big screen. That's usually not a huge deal for me. I watched almost everything just at home. But like this was, I think, just a fun one to go out and see because it ended up being fresh, original weirdness that was cool. From listening to some other podcast, I think maybe Splatterbrains talk about this. Like the two YouTubers that like put this together, one of the guys said he went to check out what kind of YouTube content are they doing? And apparently it is just your exact stereotypical YouTube stuff, which is like, wow, that's surprising because this is not at all that. And it's like patient and I thought clever and doesn't have a lot of just weird, spiky, pointless, you know, yelling and emoting. So
there's really not even like any jump. There's really not much in the way of jump stuff at all.
No. So I was really impressed there. It's like, okay, thanks universe for once again, you know, letting me learn something that just because you make stupid, shitty content, you might just be realizing that's a way to make a living. And I can't really fault people for making a living. Maybe you are capable of doing clever shit in the background and that's what this is funded. So,
well, okay,
maybe I don't have to hate all YouTubers.
Just most of them.
And I'm going to stick to my guns that I can still hate most. But
well, the one thing I wish you guys, and I don't know if they'll ever make it available, if it could ever be available online, but the thing that sucks is that you guys didn't get the experience to be able to see the thing that they made for Draft House, like kind of about the development of the film and then getting it made and then like actually premiering at Sundance, and then that's how they got hooked up with A24. And so, but they made this little like kind of featurette before the movie. And like the first 3 minutes of this, I'm like, oh, these guys can both just go fuck themselves. Like it's just obnoxious and like noisy and just like, this is not my kind of person. These guys are annoying. I don't like it. And then it was like, as we went along, I was like, oh wait, they've got big personalities. They're not bad dudes. Like you can get that feel where you're like, okay, these are genuinely decent dudes. They're just,
and I'm fully guilty of that.
And it's just like
assuming people are shitheads.
Well, and it's like
YouTube stuff.
That's kind of And so I was like, as I watched along, I was like, okay, now I'm kind of rooting for these guys, and I'm kind of into where they're coming from, and like, okay, I've kind of a different appreciation for what's going on here. So it's not just sort of like two snide pricks that are just sort of like, oh, we just like big horror movie, whatever. Like they were really just pot kettle committed. And one of the things that I thought was interesting in the little development thing that they showed was that they said they would meet with some people, producer type people, and like try to get funding or whatever else, and they'd be like, oh, well, what if we shoot with actors that don't have as thick of accents or no accents at all, or what if we shoot somewhere else, and instead of like, you know, because of marketability, and they're like, no, we're not doing that. You're like, this is, we're from here, and this is the people that we want to work with are here, and that's what we're doing. And it's like
that too,
and that was cool, and it was like, so it kind of gave me a feeling of being like, they really kind of dialed in on this idea and this thing that they got kind of presented with, and they kind of developed it out in a way that was like, they did, there was certainly a genuine ownership and a certain they really possessed the thing, the movie, and they really kind of had ownership of it, which I really admired. So I thought that was really cool. That being said, I mean, as far as the movie goes itself, I think it had some really good moments. And I think there were some really things that were particularly interesting and very creative and kind of unique. If I'm being very honest, I did kind of come away with this like, that was really cool. That was solid. I really liked that. And then my brain just going like, but why didn't they do this? 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 And so like, it wasn't like I didn't like it, because I did like it, but it was like, I kept thinking like, boy, I would like more of a lot of these things. And one of the things that really did reflect on this like last week or so is like the mom character is a good example. It's like Miranda Otto is a great actress. Like she's in a lot of stuff and she's solid and she's always good and she's an excellent actress. It's like I get that they're writing the characters they're writing whatever, but just the like shades of abusive, harpy, shitty single mom character as like it was like more than just a cardboard cutout. I just was like, I was very off put by the way that that character is kind of written. I get where they're coming from. I get what the point was, but it was sort of like, it's, it was very one dimensional and kind of distracting about how kind of like, ugh, the way that that character is written. Cause she's like, goddamn good. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted more from that part of the character. And then the other thing that I kind of felt a little bit hollow with was like the group of friends are like our main girl, Sophie Wilde, who was great. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's really good in this. And then like the brother and the sister and like their friendship and then all the other kind of dynamics that are going on there. And you have Mia is kind of like this sort of like, you know, kind of outcast or whatever else, but it's sort of like that sort of drops almost instantaneously. And it's like, oh, do the thing along with the rest of it. Like, oh, well, the cool kids or whatever else, like, you know, passing the joint around or whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, all the, like, ostracization and, like, kind of veiled abuse in the hallway at school and all these kind of things, like, all just kind of goes away almost instantaneously. And it's sort of like, I kept thinking of, like, Boys in the Trees, where, like, they were much more deft and delicate in that, like, dynamic of the social dynamic, whereas this one, it kind of seemed to be like, and green light, vroom. And then, like, all that stuff sort of fell away to a point. And it's like, so that was kind of disappointing because I kind of felt like there needed to be more there because there was enough pain for her to be dealing with that could have, it could have come out a little bit more in the narrative as far as that goes. And then, like, there is that thing with this, too, where, you know, they're kind of using it. It's almost like a metaphor. The hand is like a kind of like a metaphor for like drugs. Like, oh, pass it around.
Yeah, the drug thing didn't occur to me till I'd heard someone else discuss it. But then I was like, oh, actually, yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, it kind of clicks with them. Like, kind of, like, especially when they're all taking turns and like, whoa, and that was
the
crazy.
Peer pressure of it. And yeah, and the like idea that kind of essentially you take too much and you get fucked up.
And you know, then be like, boy, they don't look like they're having fun, but when they're done, they talk about how fun it was.
Right.
Yep.
You know, like you watch your friend, even if it's just someone getting drunk on Everclear in high school, and you're like, you spent 6 hours laying in a pool of your own vomit. You're telling me how awesome the party was last night.
Like, yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. So like there is that, that social dynamic, I think they nailed. It was just the kind of the weird character build out, you know, where, how they relate to each other, which was kind of, it was interesting. It was kind of like, I felt like there was some stuff kind of going on there. And then the second and third act where we're getting more data about Mia's mom and, you know, you don't have to be a horror movie expert to be like, you know, when the mom was talking to her, it's sort of like we know that's not mom. Like, oh, yeah. You know,
it's, I mean, like, movie is being very ominous anytime this is happening.
Oh yeah. No, they're not trying to put it over, but it's sort of, it's still, it's one of those things you're like, come on, character, you got to know that's not the mom. And the character's like, oh, I'm talking to my mom though. And it's like, oh, that's sad. But the, yeah, we're getting more data about the mom.
Although she's pretty clueless about everything regarding her mom from jump. Right.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know, Scully, you were sitting next to me. Did I actually scoff out loud? Because I know I did mentally, at least, when they said she accidentally overdosed on sleeping pills.
Yeah, I think we all
know what that means. That is not a thing that can ever happen. Like, because I was sat there going, you know how, like, I don't know, I've taken melatonin or whatever. People have all kinds of different sleeping stuff. And you know how, like, they give you this huge jar of pills, and if you take 67, you'll sleep like a baby and get the nice restful night, but any other number of pills will kill you. And it's such a drag having to count them out every night. You know, as a mom who has a mom who tried to kill herself with pills, that's not an accident. Like, people that do that are doing that shit on purpose. So if you're willing to, like, suspend your disbelief enough to think your mom accidentally took too many pills and nearly died or died or whatever, then I can kind of see you, like, doing that as a setup for someone that's going to believe the absurdity that her mom is really appearing to her and trying to take care of her. Mm-hmm. And that's like the closest you can get to making that really realistic.
You would be so desperate to see them and hear from them again. I think that even if it was scary, it would be worth it.
Right. And I think that's kind of what they're trying to illustrate with, like, the silly setup of that, of her, like, mm-hmm. just not believing what's right in front of her, is that she's then willing to believe anything in front of her, kind of as the reverse of that.
Yeah. It would have been like,
it's the kind of thing that didn't bother me in the theater.
Yeah. I do like that this turns into a spirits go and fuck with you kind of thing, instead of just the straight, like, there's a boogans hiding in the hand that's going to get you.
Yeah. I like the around and find out aspect, because I think, as we talked about in the lobby, like with Jess, if this was a real thing, absolutely, this is what teenagers would do with it. Mm-hmm. You'd videotape your friends looking like idiots. This is absolutely feels real and lived in to me as far as that goes.
I mean, to a point. I mean, there are I would say that there are certain things that, like, you know, the once something bad happens, I mean, like, you know, whenever you get reminded of your own mortality, I think, you know, you can kind of, it can sober you up relatively quickly. And it's sort of like, and that's the kind of thing that occurs in this, where, like, you know, at a certain point, it's like, oh, the consequences are kind of real. Like, yeah, we should really stop doing the thing. Like, but then Mia's.
Yeah, but think of how many teenagers die, like, drunk driving and, like, shit like that. And you go, yeah, and then, you know, the next year, there's the one that is killed in the next graduating class and the next graduating class. Like, that shit fades pretty quick, I think.
Well, I guess to a point,
and but that's,
I mean,
when they actually know each other, because, like, this one also, like, the kid we see in the open, none of these kids actually know or experienced that, right?
Well, our two guys knew him, right? That was the thing.
Our main folks were following, like,
yeah,
like our, you know, like our lead and her pseudo family, like, to them, that's a totally separate world. Like, there's no, like, we've seen the real world consequences of this play out in front of us. So I feel like that makes it a lot easier for everybody to just rely on it being a game. Cause if there's anything dangerous about it, it's just like, well, I know a kid in another town, two towns over that's every story in school.
Well, see, that makes me think of that short that they did of several years ago where they kind of dissection of a lot of the horror tropes, whatever else. And like, I've got this video, and if you watch it, and in 7 days you die, and you're like, really? And they can't see it. And then he just takes the video and just breaks it.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think there's a wrong way to read Reese's as far as this goes, but I get what they're going for, and I get what they're getting at, but I guess, I mean, maybe I've just gotten too fucking old, but I just kind of get where I'm like, I don't want to have any danger. I don't want to have any possibility. You could do the thing for too long, and then they could really get you, and you could really be in some trouble. Like, well, then that's reason enough to not do it. Like, perfect.
Yeah. No thanks.
Thank you for filling me in on that. I think I'm good. I'm gonna boogie. Thanks so very much. That being said, the one of my favorite things when this was, like, how they introduced the, you know, before we got to zero in mainly on the manifestation of the mom, but, like, the earlier on when we see the people, mm-hmm. when they, you know, it's like, and you open your eyes and then they're sitting there. It's like, that concept is great. Like, that is so cool. The first time you, like, look up and there's, like, this, like, bloated sort of dude, and you're like, whoa, like, holy crap. Like, that was a great, because they didn't jump. They don't jump out. They don't. It's not a fly. It's not a, you know, a Silent Hill nurse situation. Nothing. It's just sort of like they're just there, just sitting there. Like,
you rang.
You rang. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like, that is such a cool concept. That is such a cool idea, and it really throws you off. Like,
yeah, playing it at least until they get, you know, deeper in the movie. Never playing them as a haunting, but merely as like a house guest, you know, is a weird, and again, lulls not only them, but I think us into a sense of, like, barely contained security. Maybe it's still freaky, right? But, like,
yeah,
a big dog on a leash is intimidating, but you feel comfortable walking past the circumference of where it can reach, and, you know. And then when the leash breaks, all bets are off.
Well, think if you're, it's like if you're at the zoo, like in the monkey area, and you're walking by all the, like, the two levels of plexiglass and the fencing that they have for the baboons, and you're walking by and, like, oh, a bunch of baboons and baboon stuff, and you're walking by and plexiglass, no plexiglass, and it's sort of like, and it's like, oh, that's like, I had a false sense of security here, and now I do not have that so much. This is like, so at any point as a more stodgy adult, I'm watching this going like, could you not see that all this is going to do is this ends, like, we saw the beginning of the movie, you didn't see the beginning of the movie, but, like, you know, we know this is not going to go good, and, like, these things are going to take every opportunity to take advantage of you, you dummies. And, like, what is, you know, it, just like what keeps going back to the drug thing, and so, like, it just really kind of plays in on that, which is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It works fine. But I did spend a lot of time just, I feel like maybe, like, tisking a little bit. I mean, like, God damn it. What the hell's wrong with you, knucklehead?
I guess that's part of the point, though, especially if we're talking about a metaphor for addiction.
Yeah.
Like, everyone who's outside of it can see that this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But you can't. I mean, like, no, the only addiction that I am, that I know is smoking. And it was that, like, everyone else around me could see that I had no business smoking and should quit, but, and that I really wasn't getting anything out of it. But I'd say, you know, I have to do this. I have to have it. I'm just a nervous person. I need this to calm down. And yeah, it's amazing what your brain will do to you.
Well, the most clever application of that, I thought anyway, was where it was like, you know, you have to have all the people and you have the timing and you have the person strapping you down and you have all these like things, all these sort of like rules in terms of like how to do the thing. And they're all together and they're having a good old time and all passing it around or whatever else. And all, you know, just like you would imagine, you know, a bunch of people sit around getting high or whatever. It's like, okay, fine. But then as things get more desperate and your motivations change and she's like doing it, she does it by herself and like doesn't have anybody to tie her down or doesn't have anybody to time, but it doesn't have whatever. And she's like, there you go with the drug bit. Like it's one thing if you're around a bunch of people, but then if you're like, you know, off by yourself, like I have some experience with this, where sort of like now the dynamic really changes. Like that's a different animal. And it's like, I thought they did a good job of that part of it. And then once you get to the last act of like, once the brother has kicked his own ass on myself Tuesday and he's in the hospital and like things are getting a little more desperate. And then she's really falling into the spell of the quote unquote mom. And then I guess things are going, it's like, ah, this is going to be one of those things that's going to, it's not going to work out for everybody. Like this is going to be one of those deals. And it was like, I don't know what you all made of the last act of it, but it was like, I was engaged in it, but I was also kind of like, I wasn't just sort of like, it was more just sort of like, it's like, I kind of just knew it was like, well, this is not.
I really loved how it turned out. And I know it could have gone either way pretty easily. But I really enjoyed the first, like the kid kicking his own ass made the like headbanging scene in Hereditary look like nothing.
Yeah.
Like that really was. And yeah. And both of the times that they did it too.
And played, I think exactly right tonally to maximum. Oh shit. I wish this wasn't happening.
Yeah, could you go from everybody having a decent time and then just boom. Everything is shitty.
And it's just, it really just makes you go, oh, like, bravo movie for doing this so well. I just really wish I didn't have to watch it. It's really.
Well, that kid, too. You know, hats off to that kid. That shot where he pops his head up and he, on his face, is looking around like, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm really in a lot of pain. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what I can do here. And, like, hats off to that kid because, like, that was. Little tiny moment, but it was very, very, very unsettling. Like that was some excellent face acting because it was like it really read genuinely like scared and trapped and not in control. And like a young actor, and like good for him. Like I was very, very effective for sure.
And so I did like the way that this turned at the end because it could have gone just full Oculus. With no, the evil thing wins, tough shit. You know, you kill the kid, you end up in prison, the hand moves to somebody else. And like, it is a lighter ending to have the kid survive, even though she has to like get hit by a car to make it happen. But then it ties in nicely with them constantly saying you'll belong to them forever. That means just like, now you have to sit in the supernatural waiting room and talk to idiots who grab a ceramic hand. Like you know, you paid your money, you took your bets and here you are. Like that little, the last little bit of this was so goddamn satisfying.
Yeah. I think this, I did like the ending, which I even like watching it, I was dreading a little bit how they were going to stick the landing. Cause I didn't see how they would. And I think they did, which is great. Also really impressed to hear like the day we saw it, it had already been like greenlit for a sequel. So that'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. Cause one of the things that we talked about walking out of the theater was actually enjoying how they just left a lot open and didn't over explain things, which I guess bodes well now that, you know, if you've got a sequel, you've got places to go. And part of that is the stuff that made me think. Yeah, right. And so, like, but part of that is what gives you the Monday morning quarterbacking as you keep thinking, because, man, did I think about this one a lot for the next few days. But, like, it gives you the chance to kind of find little things. You're like, well, why this or how that? And I had some of those moments, too. But then partly I also had moments of going, oh, I wonder if this or if that, and kind of speculating where I found gaps that were less satisfying as I thought about them. And that still means it kind of worked. So, like the initial watching of it was just great. And then some ups and downs thinking about it, but that still ends up very much on the positive side. Like, it was just refreshing to watch something that, I didn't know where it was going really the whole time. And, and having the bonus appeal of like making the movie better or worse in my head, you know, after the fact was still fun too. And that's cool, you know, compared to a lot of the stuff that I don't bother to go see in theaters lately, where it's like, I'm not going to go see another Insidious where it's a boogan in the closet, you know, like it just, this had so much more going on where even the parts that don't work were at least original. So that's cool.
Yeah, and great, great performances.
Yeah, our lead, what was her name again? Starts with an S, right?
Oh, Sophie Wilde.
Yeah. She's fucking fantastic and should be in everything now. So good. But every time I watch something where a character has to be possessed or something like that, or play another character or whatever, right? They get taken, their body gets taken over by it, you know, even if it's like a comedy, right? And you just watch this actor suddenly have to do this huge swing in one direction and then a huge swing back. And like, especially with the young kid, I was like, God damn, like what an amazing performance that is. And the level of craft you have to have and the maturity and that skill to be able to do something like that and not look silly is really, really impressive. And this whole cast nails all that stuff. So I was very
just
happy.
It's like the falling over laughing with the black eyes. Like that was really cool. Yeah. So many neat little moments in this. Like from the beginning, that opening kill is pretty brutal in its simplicity, right? And that kind of sets the stage for what's to come.
That opening scene, I'll say too, that one really put me on edge, because it's like, I think Josh, I don't think you were in Flagstaff anymore, but it was senior year. It was in one of those apartments that was like, you know, each room was like individually rented, but there's like shared spaces. And so it was like, it was me and Vic Alm and Matt Ulrich. But then there was one other room, and the fall we had this guy named Chris, who was this kind of a hippie guy and kind of a character, and he was perfectly nice fellow. And then like his life kind of went kind of awry a little bit, and he was getting into like a lot of heavier drugs and the kind of like not going to class, not doing a lot of other kinds of things. And it all culminated where me and Vic and Matt were going to go get some food and go see a movie. A big surprise. And he's like, oh, we're gonna have a couple people over. And that's what I was like, okay, that's cool. Yeah, no problem. And then we like came back, and there was like, I don't know, 50 people in our apartment. And like, it was just like people everywhere, all stuff going on, noise and stuff. And in his room, he had like completely destroyed like his like bed and stuff. And he was like just talking a bunch of nonsense and acting super crazy. And then like cops got called and all this kind of stuff. And it was just this crazy thing. He's completely completely off the rail entirely, 10 Ways Till Tuesday. And it was like, so that opening scene, like I was just immediately transported back to that that experience. And it's like, not in a bad way, not like a little traumatizing or whatever, but it was more just sort of like, it was like, it's like, oh, that is just this frantic thing of being like, somebody is acting not human or in a human sort of way, and like how uneasy that is. Like the brother's like, you know, come on, we're just gonna go, we're gonna do this, that, whatever else. And that's sort of like, it's like, no, you're relating to him as if he's a person. And it's like, nah, he's not, that's not a, it's a person suit, but it's not a person. And I thought it was just like super effective. And then we just turns them with the scissors, you're like, Christ. Like, so it was just from the just a boffo kind of start off. And it's like, Jesus. So, you know, good on them. I think they really seem to have a pretty consistent creative vision. And I was like, it was pretty neat to see how the whole thing the whole thing played out. And I'd be curious. I'd be very curious to see when they have more time, more space, and a little bit more of a, flexibility to see what they're going to do with the story as they build it outward. Because the little coda at the end was interesting. You know, like the, and it's like, and then. I welcome you in, or whatever the line is, whatever else, and then all of a sudden it's a group of people, like they appear to be of a different nationality. They're almost like a different country sort of thing, and they're like, oh, it's like, okay.
That just like, oh, there's a guy holding my hand. It's like, oh shit, my hand is the hand.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
What?
Yeah, heavy. You know, you can. I think there's such an important distinction between a movie that is mean and a movie that has contempt for its characters.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is a movie that is mean, right? Yeah. It's like Green Room kind of mean, and it barely lets somebody off the hook at the end, but they also have to die. You know, like it's mean. It's not Eden Lake mean, but it's mean.
Yeah.
But then, you know, like something like, what was the, like Contracted from back in the day. Like that has contempt for its characters and hates them and is thus trying to punish them. Like that's a different animal because the people who made the movie don't like these people. Why should I like them? And I think this movie actually likes its people.
We're calling back a lot of movies we watched years ago. Charlie said Boys in the Trees and my brain went, that's a name I've not heard in a long time. Because I instantly flashed to like telling my boss about it at Potbelly and going, oh, it's fucking great. You should watch it. It's on whatever streaming service. Like weird, but I was like, oh, all right.
And you come talk in that trash and they'll pull your card. Anyway, so for this guy, feel free to add more comments if you have them, dudes. But I would just say, I was impressed. Like this is an 8.5 out of 10. I think it's a really great first effort. It's great to see indie horror that is just a really good movie and not relying heavily on stylistic gimmicks or not being too too good to be scary. And like, this has a lot of ambition and sincerity to it. And I dug the shit out of it.
Yep. I think you guys or I said everything we need to, as far as I'm concerned. So, I'll go just a titch higher and say 9 out of 10, because at least for me, like I'm basing that just entirely off going in and sitting in a theater and watching it. And goddamn, that was fun. And I do think this will work just fine at home too, once it's streaming wherever. I don't think that's going to diminish the film, but, it was just really refreshing. And I don't know if I've been watching a lot of bad movies lately because I've been watching all the Puppet Master shit. Mm. And so maybe just the idea of watching something that was a new idea and a fresh take and had characters I cared about. It was just like, God damn, this just was a real pleasant surprise and a ton of fun. So yeah, this will be another one I'll enjoy recommending to people.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll be like the low person on the totem pole. Like, and again, I really liked it. I really did like the movie. I thought it was really good. I liked the people. Like, they kind of endeared themselves and I think they made a lot of good creative decisions. Yeah. I guess part of it is just like, I want as much hard thinking about who characters are and how they function. That I want than as much as the story. Like, I don't want like aimless, rudderless nonsense, but like, I want a lot of commitment to like what the characters and what they actually are. And so like, you know, the mom character and a little bit with the boyfriend fella and a few things like that. It's just sort of like, it's like, okay, I just want more from that. But on the overall, I think it was really cool and God bless them for like, they could have absolutely every 5 minutes had something popping out of the darkness. Like it could have been absolutely been that. And it's just like, be like, nope, we're not doing that. We're just going to let you sit in this creepy fucking atmosphere and just be like, you're kind of stuck like these people are. And it's like, oh, that's cool. So I'll say 8 out of 10, 8 out of 10, up high, down low, too slow.
Excellent.
Sure.
Oh, in keeping with the loose theme of the show, something, something hand job.
If we were still in the like heyday of the scary movie franchise, there would absolutely be a hand job scene.
This would be ripe for that kind of parody.
Yeah, fuck to me. Probably.
Oh, did we come up with all of our available sequel titles in our text chain? Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah.
It was Look Who's Talking Now. Mm-hmm. Talk to the Hand. What else was that? I feel like there was another one. So, yeah. Once you start down that rabbit hole, that's fun, too.
I do love the image though of like the like taking the idle hands and then this and then, like but you take like Devon Sawa a la Hunter and then like
Hunter,
you know, and, like so he's like grizzled and built and just like seen some shit and then it's like but then you throw in like Seth Green to sort of like you know this like corpse with him, he's like hee, you know, like this crazy dynamic
between and we're back into scary movie territory.
Yeah, as I say, at that point it starts to, there's no way to ground that at that point.
Anything that gets Jessica Alba back on screen. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, nobody has ever looked more attractive in their goddamn life.
I thought she's in like a TV show again.
Yeah, Zoe Saldana's in this new thing that's on Paramount Plus that it's on my list. I don't know if I'm going to get to it anytime in the next couple of years, but.
The Lioness?
Lioness, yeah. Which I saw a little making of thing. I was like, oh, dope. So like it was pretty cool, but I think I got time for certain things and some things I'll get to eventually.
Time to reap, time to sow, time for Alba, time for Zaldana.
Yes.
Alba, Zaldana, Alakazam. Anyway, let's take a quick break and then talk about our next stuff and then get the hell out of here. Anyway.
Yes, sir.
So next week we are going to watch a brand new one, Cobweb, on video on demand. This was recently in a very limited theatrical run because as a movie that is fucking set on Halloween, clearly early August was the perfect time to release it to 10 theaters. But
yeah, Cobweb, I'm so baffled by this. Yeah. I'm so baffled by this.
And we're also going to watch Rent-A-Pal that's available on Amazon Prime. And then a movie called River. That stars Rossif Sutherland. It came out in 2015. So just make sure you get the right one. That is available on your finer streaming sites as well. And
streaming sites.
He's quite massive. That's some streaming shite. Like, geez, Sean Connery.
Steaming shite.
What's that joke about him putting up a storage thing for his books, but then it falls down. I can only blame my shelf. Mm-hmm. Like that. I can't remember.
That shouldn't have made me laugh after you over-explained it in the way you did, but it did.
Well, we all know what time that Sean Connery arrived at Wimbledon.
The
10-ish.
Good.
I'm so happy that none of you knew that in advance.
We gotta go.
I've been dressed this entire time, and I say goodbye.
Hey, we'll have a short for next week, as one might expect. That short is called Stay, and will be in the show notes on our website at horrorshowhot.com.
Please tell me you want to.
Real quick, everybody, I don't know if this will affect anyone listening, and if it does, then maybe you won't even hear this, but I guess Stitcher's shutting down at the end of the month. Yep. So if you listen on Stitcher, find one of the different things. There's a whole list of links on the website of ways you can subscribe. And if you would like to see us on a service that we're not already on, let us know and we'll add ourselves to that. That being said, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
Pardon me. This is Charlie down in Austin. A super fast recommendation that's tangential to horror. There's an excellent Tasmanian/Australian series that Amazon picked up that I've not heard yet if TV Australia is going to be making a second season. I hope to God they are. This is a series called Deadlock. And it's like it's kind of a cop setup sort of a thing, but it's female-led for one thing. But then also it's just... it kind of follows a series of murders, and it's like there's a lot of other stuff going on, and it's just very beautifully written and dark and a little quirky and weird. The two female characters, one of whom was in The Breaker Uppers, which if you've not seen that, you gotta do. But it's really cool, and it was just really a different sort of a thing because anymore any cop procedural things. Like, I could close my eyes, cover my ears, and still tell you the plot points of any cop procedural. I mean, we've seen thousands of them. So, yeah, this is a different kind of a thing, and it's got different beats and a different rhythm to it, and it's fun and enjoyable. So any more, you know, if you can seek out stuff that does it differently, Happy Valley is another one that are really great. But Deadlock's got a little bit of a horror twinge to it, so it's but super, super enjoyable, and I really hope they make a second season. Beyond that, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, and then before you know it, we'll be talking to you again. So until then, take care. See you later. Bye-bye. It's just a random ejaculation of evil into this thing. It's so funny. It's like it just I was laughing. I was just giggling all day that I would get to work and I'm just giggle. Yes, I know. I recognize what I did there. I apologize.
Yes. That was his ejaculation of evil.
Apparently tonight is a night that does not want to do work.
It just made me think of a Reddit post where somebody had grabbed a phrase from one of the Harry Potter books, and it was like, "Oh, Harry," Professor ejaculated, and he's like, "Sometimes you could just say said."
Yeah,
but then someone posted, "Oh, Harry," he nutted.